Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Ruth Buzinski, a licensed psychologist in Connecticut and the president of the National Institute for the Clinical Application of Behavioral Medicine. I've got a very important and interesting story to tell you about today. My guest is Dr. Elizabeth Hopper. She's the director of Project Reach. That is a program that serves victims of human trafficking throughout the United States, and I'm excited to have us talk about it. So welcome, Elizabeth. Thanks for being part of our program.
Thank you, Ruth.
And I think a lot of us live our lives without really ever thinking about human trafficking or even realizing that it's something that is still going on. So can we first start to define it? What is it and how many people are involved and so forth?
Sure. Human trafficking is basically modern-day slavery. So slavery has been outlawed in the United States for over 100 years. And what makes human trafficking unique is that it basically involves the idea that one person can enslave another person in ways other than just physically restraining them, locking them up in a room, chaining them away somewhere, that traffickers can actually use very subtle psychological coercion to manipulate another person. So basically, human traffickers are using these psychological strategies to exploit another person for financial gain, and that can either be through sex trafficking or through labor trafficking. Sex trafficking can include things like prostitution, but it can also involve stripping or internet pornography, a variety of commercial sexual acts. And labor trafficking involves a whole range of types of labor. It could include factory work or farm labor, but also somebody working in someone's home doing domestic work. So currently there's estimated to be around 600 to 800,000 people trafficked across international borders worldwide, and each year between 14,500 and 17,500 people trafficked from other countries into the United States, and that's every year. And then in addition to that, there's trafficking that happens within countries, so domestic trafficking. And according to the Department of State, around 200,000 young people in the United States might be the victims of trafficking within the U.S.
Really? So what kinds of other psychological means? If it's not out-and-out kidnapping, how does this happen?
Traffickers are pretty sophisticated, actually, in how they manipulate other people. There's a lot of very, very subtle ways that traffickers can use. Typically, how they begin is by using some sort of deception or fraud. So they're promising something, that life will be better. So for international trafficking, you'll be able to come to the United States. You're going to have a great job. You'll make a lot of money. You'll be able to send money back home to your family. Or for domestic trafficking, it might be somebody posing as a boyfriend. I love you. I'll take care of you. We're going to be together. And then it kind of goes from there. So as people start to discover that the reality of their situation is a little different, you know, traffickers might move their victims from location to location, keeping them isolated so they never develop a connection with another person who might be able to help them. They might work them from, you know, really early in the morning until late at night. So basically their energy is all taken up. They don't have the mental energy left to think about how to get out of the situation. Many international trafficking victims don't speak the language. They're not familiar with the culture. Traffickers will threaten them, so threaten either to hurt them directly or to turn them in to the authorities. That could be immigration or law enforcement, or threaten to hurt their family back home. And for many of the people, the traffickers are actually from their community. So the trafficker is familiar with where their family lives, might know their family members, and so this is an actual real threat to them. And all that stuff is before they're even you even get to the point of physical assaults. So there are frequently physical assaults and sexual assaults. And if you consider sex trafficking where somebody's being forced into prostitution, you know, that's a person who's basically being sexually assaulted over and over again, repeatedly every day. And so you can imagine how that might break down somebody's spirit.
Absolutely. What is being done about it?
There's a lot that the U.S. government is doing to try to both build up prevention efforts, so basically public education, getting people to be aware of it, public education campaigns to make people who are potential victims aware so that they aren't
mm-hmm.
fooled into, they don't get into these situations in the first place. Then there are efforts towards increasing consequences for traffickers. So trafficking is now a federal crime, and there's also a number of state-level crimes. It's becoming a crime at the state level. So there are more prosecutions of traffickers. And then there's also funding that's available now for victim services. So more and more service providers, including more recently mental health providers, are becoming involved so that they can provide services to trafficking victims and try to help them on their way towards becoming more independent and self-sufficient and in the healing process.
I would think it would be a hard to intervene. I mean, how would you even identify who the victims are?
Yeah, it's difficult
yeah.
to identify, and that's one of the things that's really been highlighted. The Department of Health and Human Services has a campaign that's called, you know, it's Beneath the Surface, and that's really what trafficking is. It's a hidden crime, and some of these folks are actually in somebody's house. They never run across another person, and so locating them can be very difficult. The other thing is that sometimes trafficking survivors don't even see themselves as victims, so you might run into somebody and be talking to them and not realize that you're talking to somebody who's a trafficking survivor. So generally, the way that victims are being identified, there are a number of law enforcement task forces throughout the country, and as law enforcement becomes more educated and takes this on as a mission, there are more and more raids happening and more people are being identified through law enforcement. But also there are a number of people who are either self-identifying, they're realizing what's happened to me is wrong, or there are good Samaritans who notice there's something suspicious happening next door and they call someone.
But if the person is from another country, they probably aren't here on a valid visa, I would think, in which case if they try to get help, they must be afraid of being deported.
Yes, absolutely. And that's particularly because the traffickers use that as one of their main coercive strategies, that they're threatening, you know, law enforcement is going to come get you, you're going to be put in jail, you're going to be deported. So people are very afraid. And it's a process for them to begin to establish some trust to think about, you know, disclosing what's been happening to them, and particularly to think about disclosing that to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. And before we start talking about your program, which I'm really eager to hear about, I have one other question. Is it generally a highly organized crime, or is it more, this is going to sound strange, but mom and pop type of persecutors throughout the world doing this?
Yeah, there's really a variety in terms
mm-hmm.
of the types of trafficking. Trafficking is right now tied with dealing arms for the number two most financially lucrative crime.
Really?
And so what you can imagine from that is that it's highly associated with organized crime. So organized criminal networks that are, for instance, involved in drug trafficking, which is the number one, or involved in arms smuggling, are also frequently involved in human trafficking because they're making a lot of money from it. But there's also a lot of trafficking that's happening with, for instance, somebody who comes from another country and brings their domestic worker with them and is mistreating them here and, you know, not really paying them, and they don't see themselves as a trafficker. Or, you know, a young man who begins prostituting his girlfriend, and he's not going to see himself as a trafficker, but it all fits within the trafficking laws.
All right. So let's hear about your program. What does Project Reach do?
Yeah, so Project Reach is a very unique program. It's the only program of its kind in the country. And what we do is we offer specialized mental health and crisis intervention services for victims of trafficking throughout the United States and its commonwealths and territories. So what that means is that when a trafficking survivor is identified, you know, in the United States somewhere, and the local service providers are needing assistance, they can call on Project Reach, and we'll travel to that site to both do assessment. So we assess trafficking survivors to help with service planning, to make recommendations for intervention. And then we also do evaluations in support of their immigration relief applications. And then we'll also do intervention. So we might do group intervention or individual intervention. And it's generally a short-term, very resiliency-focused intervention. So we'll do things like providing psychoeducation, normalizing victims' reactions, helping them identify coping skills, and then also working with them on building affect regulation strategies. In addition to the direct service that we do, we also offer training and consultation to local providers who work with trafficking survivors. So basically, we're trying to build capacity in local communities for the providers in those communities to be able to provide trauma-informed and culturally relevant mental health services to trafficking survivors.
Uh-huh. So by the time you work with a victim, they are no longer being trafficked. Are they in a home or living on their own or?
That's generally true, although not always. I mean, we have worked with some survivors in the process of escaping from trafficking situations. One thing that we haven't really talked about is the identification with the perpetrator, which is for some survivors, they develop an emotional connection to their trafficker. It might be that that person, you know, has posed as their boyfriend or their husband, or it might be just that the person was sometimes kind to them. And so getting out of the situation, leaving the situation can be difficult, even though it's a bad situation. So we have worked with people in that context, but by and large, people are out of the situation already. They might be in a shelter. They might be in some kind of short-term housing. They might be living with relatives. So it really varies, you know, the situation that they're in.
Do we have shelters for people who are in this situation?
We're really at the very, very beginning of beginning to develop specialized shelters. And what we're needing is specialized shelters for international survivors who've gone through similar things for women. Mm-hmm. We need some specialized shelters for men, and then we also are needing specialized shelters for domestic teens who've been sexually exploited. And right now what's happening is that a lot of those folks are going into systems that already exist. So it might be a domestic violence shelter or a homeless shelter or a residential treatment program for adolescents or a group home. But because of the nature of this crime and the specifics that these victims are facing, we really need specialized services.
And do we have much data, like a follow-up data on people that have been out of the situation for a while, a year or 5 years or
No, there hasn't been a lot of research done on mental health outcomes in trafficking. We're really beginning with our program to get a sense of, in the immediate aftermath, what are some of the psychological symptoms that trafficking survivors are facing. And what we're seeing is a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder is really primary, and depression is really primary. And that varies a little bit depending on the type of trafficking. So, for instance, in labor trafficking, we're seeing slightly more depression. With sex trafficking, we're seeing slightly more post-traumatic stress disorder, but we're really seeing a lot of both. We're seeing anxiety disorders, dissociative disorders, and we're also seeing symptoms of complex PTSD. So many of these folks have gone through early traumatic experiences. So they might have witnessed domestic violence at home, experienced neglect, separation from family members, witnessing substance abuse in the home. So they've had early vulnerabilities, and the trafficking just kind of exacerbates that. What we don't have is much in the way of longer-term follow-up. You know, many trafficking survivors are reluctant to seek mental health services, and the mental health services that we have across the United States are a little bit patchy, and there's not cohesion in terms of collecting outcome data at this point.
Mm, okay. And how can people find out more information about your work?
They can go to our website, which is okay. www.traumacenter.org, and look up Project Reach or human trafficking. They could also contact me. So my phone number is 617-232-1303, extension 211, or email me at projectreach@traumacenter.org. And there's also some other helpful information about trafficking generally that people would have access to. There's the Human Trafficking Resource Center that's run by Polaris Project out of Washington, D.C. They have a lot of information on trafficking on their website. And the Department of Health and Human Services also has a Rescue and Restore campaign. And on their website, there's a lot of fact sheets about sex trafficking and labor trafficking. So there's a lot of information available out there for people who are interested in learning more.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for telling us about this. It's so tragic to hear that this is happening. And you know, when we thought this was something that was in our past and no longer an issue,
yeah.
It's so sad to hear about it happening still today.
Yeah, it's very much alive and present, but it's, I think, wonderful that we're getting the word out and educating people, and I thank you very much for helping us to do that.
Mm, absolutely. And thank you very much, Elizabeth, for your work.
All right, thank you.
You take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.